So, you know, everyone else is probably like, I don't know, don't mess with Cisco because he's going to take you into the wormhole and you're not going to come back. No.
Hello, everyone. I'm Kirsten.
And I'm Maria.
And this is MK Let's Talk About It, the show where two 30-somethings who have been friends for more than 2 decades discuss topics that are often on our mind and do our absolute best to stay on topic but fail every time, which I feel like is what happened in our last episode. So this episode is going to be a little bit different. I thought our last episode was going to be really light, loosey-goosey. We were going to talk about comfort foods and like rank them. And we didn't do that.
I slid into the room and I brought the heavy.
Which is always, see, that's the reality. When we talk, that's usually what happens. We can't keep anything light. And I have a feeling, even though we're talking about something light tonight, knowing that we've talked about this kind of in the past and the things that were often like pulls us in, I have a feeling this will get a little deep anyways. But we are talking about one of my favorite things in the world because I'm a super nerd and Maria is a super nerd. And so in hence, we are nerds together. We are going to be talking about Star Trek, but more specifically Deep Space Nine, because I caved and Maria got to pick which series we were going to talk about tonight. So DS9, which with one of my favorite captains, I won't lie, Avery Brooks, amazing. Captain Sisko, we'll give it up. The only black captain.
Yes.
Well, at least until that, at Discovery.
At that point.
Yeah. So we're just going to be talking about a couple of our favorite episodes, why we like them. Most likely it won't stay on that. We'll probably start talking about an episode and have it veer off. And I will naturally bring in TNG as much as possible because I love LeVar Burton and Brent Spiner and Patrick Stewart and Marina Sirtis. So I don't know. I can't stay focused, but we'll try.
I'm so excited. And I absolutely know that one of these episodes is most definitely going to veer it's not off track because it's what the episode is about. And I'm almost certain it's what the episode is about, but I couldn't find anything about it being what the episode is about. But I believe in my heart of hearts it's what the episode is about. And I know it will get us off track off of Star Trek, but it's worth it because it's such a good episode. And I love like the connection that I drew from it. And I hope that's somewhat near what they were hoping to go for. Nerd. Okay.
I'm really excited. I'll be honest, world. Maria did a little bit more research than I did. I was like, I'm just going to come in blind and act like I remember all these episodes, which I don't. Because when you binge watch things, you don't let things seep in the same way. But there are quite a few episodes I actually really love. So I look forward to hearing first your take. And then if we don't spend too much time getting into the probably one episode, I will try to throw in one of my favorites. But we'll start with yours because I know you came in with notes.
I did, because I am a very organized nerd.
I respect that.
And I just wanted to remember, I wanted to make notes just to make sure I remembered stuff. And most of them are very snarky and just funny and not like actual, really thoughtful notes. And I was lucky enough, I got to introduce my husband to Star Trek because his family was more of a Star Wars family. And so he had not really watched.
But you can like both.
You can.
You can like you can. Both. I can't stand the Trekkies versus.
No.
The Star Wars aficionados. I'm like, bro, Lucasfilms and Roddenberry they got each other. I just want to throw that out there.
Yes, most definitely. It's just that his family is very, very much into Star Wars. And they just never caught on to Star Trek. They were also just more of a movie family. And so they watched a lot of movies, and they actually did not have a lot of access to regular TV where they lived because of how far they were out from things. So they didn't have access to even just watching the channels. So it makes sense why they didn't do it. But I got to have him watch it as adults, and we binged it, but it was nice because it was before we had kids. So, you know, we paid attention somewhat more than we did now. And I think even before grad school. But yes, I have three episodes that I specifically liked at this moment. There's so many that are so good. I love DS9. I just love how different it is than all the rest of the series that I watch. I will admit that I have not kept up with Star Trek as it's gone on because, you know, it's the same thing with me in video games. I just don't have the same time that I used to.
No, that's true.
My heart belongs where it belongs, and it's been with DS9 for a really long time since I watched it growing up. But I just love DS9 and that it's like stationary and they get to explore different topics that you don't get to when you're going off from planet to planet and exploring. Okay, I'll stop now. I could go on forever. So my first episode, I hope you remember it, Kirsten. It's season 3, episode 7, Civil Defense. This is the episode where Captain Sisko and his son Jake are with Chief O'Brien in the mine processing area, and they trip this alarm that makes it think that there is a worker revolt on the station.
Oh, I do remember this episode. Sorry, continue.
I think there's a theme of my episodes because I don't know why. I just really like the father-son dynamic between the two.
Oh, throughout the whole series. Yes, the whole series was like that.
So, I mean, two of my episodes are Sisko-centric. But so the things I love about this episode is just like the MacGyvering. I mean, every Star Trek episode has MacGyvering in it, right? I'm using that as a verb. And
it's an accurate verb. It's cool.
And this one specifically, how they have to find their different ways to get out of this situation. I feel like it's just quintessential Star Trek. Like, we're solving all these high-tech problems and explaining it through these really simple metaphors. And there's the evil replicator that starts shooting at everybody. There's copious use of like going through all the ducts. There's lots of...
Can I interrupt just real quick about the crawling through these small spaces? As much as I love the Star Wars or the Star Trek world, and a lot of their storylines involve having to crawl through those small ass spaces, excuse my language. And I don't know about you, but like every time I watch it, I get a little claustrophobic. And I was like, why is this the only way to problem solve? Like, how far in the future are we? And we're still like crawling to these little... I'm sorry. I just had to throw that out there. Like every time I'm like, ugh. I wouldn't be able to do it. I'd be like, you know what? I'm just going to go down with the ship. Like, whatever it is.
To me, crawling through the ducts in DS9 is equivalent to all the, like, the shaking around that other ship-based ones had to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like this really foolish sort of looking thing that they are doing. And it just, like, it has to happen every episode. And, like, for some reason, they have to shake around like they've been hit by something. And in DS9, they always have to crawl through the duct for something. But this
always.
One, if you don't remember, it has, like, random radioactive green fire at the end of the episode in the ducts. Which... I don't know why, but I just really enjoy, and I think it just runs through the gambit of everything because it's going through what the station was before when it was like a work colony, And it has them trying to transform it into something new and just running into this huge, crazy roadblock. And then you have all these characters coming in, like Odo and Quark are stuck in the security station and they've been locked in because the Cardassians always suspected that Odo would be on the side of the workers and not their side. And then you have Garak just being himself, coming through and being some weird, mysterious spy that no one really knows what he does. And he just pretends that he's a tailor. And then you have Gul Dukat just show up randomly and like be like, hey, I'm here, too. I don't know. It's just like it's like everyone's there.
I'm sorry. I'm loving your enthusiasm. And now I wish I'd really like watched that episode.
You have to go back and watch it.
Because like, it cracked. I do like the episodes where they really throw in a bulk of characters into one scene. Because in most of the storylines, usually it really generally follows like maybe three-ish people, four-ish people. And nine times out of ten, those three or four-ish people, like one or two of them are like the leads. Mm-hmm. And so when you bring in all of these massive characters and watch them as they try to respond to this crisis, because they ultimately, the bad guy and the good guy always seem to have to come together to solve the problem. And then as soon as it's done, they're like, we hate you and I will kill you one day kind of attitude. So I really do like those types of episodes when they come together like that.
That is exactly what happens in this episode, because then Gul Dukat looks like a fool because he tries to leave and leave them to explode, because of course the station is self-destructing. And
always.
And he tries to leave and gets this message that they always knew he was a sniveling coward. And he can't leave, so they have to work together to figure out how to circumvent this self-destruct, and they end up like, you know, whatever, absorbing it into the shields, techno babble, blah blah blah. But I love that episode. It's got like every major component of the Star Trek series except for an away mission all in one, and it's just it's hilarious. It's fun. I just really liked it. And that was one of my top ones.
Okay. All right. I'm sad I didn't. I'm not prepared to talk about that one. But okay. Now I'm gonna have to go back and watch it.
Here's the second one.
Please be one that has to do with Garak and his bromance with Dr. Bashir.
It doesn't.
Dang it!
I'm so sorry. I do love that relationship, though. I do.
Yeah.
But this one, I almost did. But this one, I think that you'll like for a different reason.
Okay.
So I'm this ready. One is also season 3. We talked about this. I don't know. Maybe just season 3 was also a year that was really good for me and I associate it with good memories. But season 3, episode 22 is called Explorers.
Okay.
And so Sisko goes to Bajor, visits a museum, and like sees these plans for a really ancient space traveling craft, right? It's these ancient plans. And he comes back to the station and is just like, yeah, I'm going to build that. And so he just decides, also, this is like the first episode, he comes back with a goatee. The iconic
yes.
goatee.
When he became the full captain.
Yes.
When he became the full captain. It's like when William Riker grew his beard.
Yes.
And you're like, there he is.
There we go.
Number one. Sorry, I told you I was going to throw in TNG, didn't I?
Facial hair is important.
Telling you. It's important.
No, but okay. So he decides. He goes to this museum, finds these ancient schematics for a ship, and decides he's going to just build it. And for a second, I'm like, okay, captain of an entire space station, yes, you have time to build an ancient ship by hand. What? I'm like happy when I can shower every day. Like this guy's going, he's got the time to build a ship by hand. And so he builds this ship, and him and his son, of course, they go on this trip. He wants to try to attempt this space travel from Bajor to Cardassia. because there Naturally. Are ancient texts that say that the people from Bajor actually were space explorers before the Cardassians, and they are like denying it. They say these people were primitive. There's no way that they could have done this. So that the whole episode is following it. I love the quaintness of the ship. I love how everything has its own like space in the ship. I love just like it looks so satisfying the way they designed the props to like crank everything and lock everything. But besides that, do you know what that reminded me of? They get to the end. They like hit some weird whatever space blah blah blah. I'm not that nerdy. They hit.
Don't
it.
They get hit by a tachyon?
Yes,
it's always a tachyon
Eddie.
Something.
It was a tachyon Eddie. Okay. I think. And their sails caught it, and their ship was so light that it launched them warp speed to Cardassian space. And they get yes. there, and of course, Gul Dukat is there. And for some reason, at the end of it, there's fireworks, which doesn't make sense to me. But he announces that they are in Cardassian space, and they proved that it could be done. And by the way, they just found the wreck of a similar ship on Cardassia, and they're here to recognize their achievement. But do you know what that reminded me of?
Go for it.
Hokulea.
Oh.
Is that not the voyage of Hokulea?
That is a beautiful connection. Boom. I would never have thought about that. See, now you got me all in my feels. Because, like, I just, when you started talking about specifically because when you were first talking, I'm like, I don't remember. But as you got more into it, I was more, because that ship looks more how we kind of, it has sails, right?
Yes.
It looks more like a ship on the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. No, that's, yeah.
So what is the Hokulea?
Talk about it.
So Hokulea, or do you want to do it? It doesn't matter to me.
No, go for it.
Okay, so I'm saying,
I mean, your family is from there.
We're not from there, though. We're not Kanaka.
Well, but I'm like, I mean, okay. I'll give you that. But you got more grounding there than I do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, we just emigrated earlier. Anyway, the Hokulea is a canoe that was built during what's called the Hawaiian Renaissance. During the 1970s, a group decided to reclaim their sailing culture mm-hmm. by building one of the most prominent that they could tell from historical documents and images what the main canoe would have been for their peoples when they were traveling long distances across the ocean. And so just like in the episode, like people told them, you're not going to be able to build this boat. It's not going to be seaworthy. Mm-hmm. And of course, mm-hmm. they did their work. They built the boat. They practiced. They learned more about navigation, about seafaring, about wayfinding, and back from the people who still do it on the islands. And mm-hmm. they have sailed thousands and thousands of miles successfully to other islands all across Polynesia in that canoe called Hokulea. And it just reminded me of this episode because it's like these people got told there's no way 1,000 years mm-hmm. before Columbus that person, Columbus, 1,000 years before, I'm going to change it. I don't want to talk about Columbus. 1,000 years before Europeans sailed across the Atlantic, that you cannot tell us that these primitive people were sailing that mm-hmm. far without the instruments that Europeans had. And it was just the same kind of mic drop. Like, yes, we did. Yes, we still can. Yes, look at us still doing it. And they still have these voyages all the time going to different places, including, did they go to Alaska? I know they've gone to San Francisco. I think they've come up this far to PNW.
Yeah, I think they... I just remember I was in Hawaii when the Hokulea made its grand voyage back into Hawaii on Oahu And how big of a deal it was. And at the time, I hadn't learned a lot about it. And this was like in 2017. I think it had made a voyage. It went to Tahiti and back, which I think is what they tried to do. They did in the 70s.
That was the original,
like, they built this. And it's such a, the whole experience is so beautiful. And I, you know, one of my really good friends, and she is Kanaka, and she, you know, she tried to keep me grounded in Hawaiian culture and roots and history. And one of the really beautiful things about that whole process is that before they even really set sail and before they, you know, all the things, it's all about how you envision your voyage. And so she would always tell me in connection to this story, when I had a big picture or when I wanted to do something that was a little bit out there, she would stop me and she says, "Kirsten, can you see Tahiti?" And I was like, "What?" And she's like, "A good navigator can stand in place and see their voyage. How are they going to get there from here to there? And until you can see Tahiti, you're not ready to start." And so, I mean, tying all that back in together, like, it is that's a beautiful connection, because we are constantly talking about Indigenous people, were and are still are, which is crazy to me that language is still being used, is primitive, and they had their tools and their resources were janky. But then I think about all these amazing things that exist and work better than the things that we have now, because we rely so much on really advanced technology. And there's something so beautiful about the simplicity of the tools that our ancestors had before us. And I think it's also like kind of an ode of respecting our past. But yeah, I'm glad you brought up that episode. That is a good episode.
It is.
The fireworks are a little bit ridiculous. But yeah, no, I remember that ship. Like, yeah. Now I can see it in my head. I'm like, oh, yeah.
And yeah, the whole idea that someone that is seen as inferior just had so much more sophisticated tools way before everyone else. I cannot imagine, like, I just can't, that it's not connected. Like, yeah. I feel like it has to be connected, because it, like, it used the exact phrasing that I went and I watched some of the Hokulea documentaries just to see if I was remembering right. Because I was like, this is what I connected it to as soon as I learned about the Hokulea. And I have a hard time imagining that it's not connected, although I could not find any documentation. And if it isn't, don't at me. I don't want to know. This is my dream. I'm living it. I want to just believe that that's what it's about.
But here's the beautiful thing about, I think, a lot of Star Trek episodes in all of their series, is that either they've inspired the way we see and do and create now. I think that's kind of the beauty of sci-fi at the end of the day. But like, they either inspire or they do. I think Star Trek does a really good job at drawing from history. And so there's probably, and they probably didn't even really recognize it, maybe they didn't think that particular story, but there may be a similar story out there that we aren't thinking about, that because they were really good at drawing from history and turning it into a theme that makes sense for their storyline. So I'm going to say, yeah, you're right. It's based off of that.
I'm sure there are many instances where people who doubted others were very wrong about what they could accomplish.
I'm going to Google it. I'm going to look it up and see what I can find. See if they do have any ties.
I did.
I probably won't have an answer now, but I did look it up.
But I couldn't find a solid connection. But dang. It seems like it can't not, but also I do full-heartedly believe that there are other instances very similar to this where some, you know, it's, I'm just going to say American or European culture believed that someone else was inferior and just got it just smacked back in their face real hard.
That is, that's a good come up story. I mean, I always root for the underdog, I think. So, I think good art allows you to draw upon your own experiences and your own understanding of the world. And so the fact that this episode that didn't probably didn't know. I don't know. I don't know any of the people who wrote these episodes. But the fact that they could create a storyline that you could, in watching your adulthood and having that sense of history of the Hawaiian community, the Polynesian community, that just means that those are good writers. Those are good. That's just a good art piece to enjoy and appreciate. And now I feel like I need to go rewatch it, because I know I binge watched this like early grad school, because I had a lot of extra free time early grad school. So having that perspective, I think I want to intentionally go back and watch that episode.
It's a good one.
So now that is also on my list.
It also touches on kind of school and going away for schooling, because that's when Jake like gets into that New Zealand program and he has to talk to his dad about it.
Doesn't he turn it down?
Oh yeah, he does. It's just the whole idea of going away from school or like leaving a place is a theme of it as well, because he doesn't say he's not going till the end. It also is Julian and O'Brien bromance episode, and I only bring that up because they say something that's really funny, where for like Bashir's character, it's like either you love him or you hate him. And that I just bring that up because I feel like that's exact. I did not like his character for like, I don't even know, maybe 2 seasons.
He was so arrogant.
Uh-huh.
Like he had a high level of cockiness that I was like, bro,
they did a good job fixing him. He was likable.
They did. I think the bromances that he had with both Garrick and with O'Brien tamed him a little bit.
Yes.
But man, I mean, I think every character, I think almost every Star Trek series I've watched the first season or two, there's a couple of characters where you're like, man, I hope they don't make it. But then like the writers figure something out for them and they're like, oh, there he is. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
I can buy this.
Yeah.
I'll let you live. You don't have to be a red shirt, I guess.
Well, now I wish I had saved Hokulea for the last one. Okay, so my last one. See, it's not just all nerdy sci-fi. We're just talking about, we connected it to real life stuff. Anyway, I'm such a nerd. The last one I picked was, again, another early one. I don't know when it gets into the war. I mean, there are good episodes, but I think I like the less high stakes stuff earlier on. This is totally not low stakes, though. Okay, season 4, episode 16, A Session.
Okay.
So this is the one where, you know, Sisko's got this whole, the Sisko. He's the emissary of the wormhole people, the wormhole god. I don't know what the prophets. That's what
it's
they call
it. The Bajoran gods, isn't it? Yeah.
And so
I was like, wait, what?
He's like struggling at the beginning. He's like blessing people, and it's always been something he's uncomfortable with, being this religious figure. And
especially because he wasn't really a faith based kind of guy, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, he had bad.
He's like, that's
happen.
Not my bag. Yeah, because his wife dies. Mm-hmm. That's right. Damn Borg.
Well, Picard Borg. Anyway.
hey.
I love Picard. I do.
Don't hate on my guy, Brute.
But he did kill
his
wife.
He went through some stuff.
Anyway.
I mean, not on purpose.
Anyway.
He cried. Do you remember that episode when they were like changing him into a Borg and you see that tear just fall down his cheek as they fade out? Man, that episode made me cry. I felt so bad for him.
He came back.
I mean, he came back, but he came back different.
That made me feel like Monty Python. They turned him back.
He goes back. It's not
after
that big
after he kills
of a, deal.
A bunch of people. Okay. Anyway, so.
Dang.
You can't forget about the bad things just because you like someone. Anyway. So.
Fine.
He's the emissary, the Sisko. And then he...
The Sisko.
I love how they call him the Sisko. Anyway, someone else comes out of the wormhole and was saved by the prophets, the aliens inside the wormhole. And then he says, because he came out of the wormhole and he was saved by them, he's from the past and he's some famous poet and he disappeared. He's saying he's the emissary because he meets all these mm-hmm. requirements. And so Sisko's like, yeah, okay, bet, let's go. You're the emissary. I'm done. I don't want to be the emissary anymore. And so he lets this other guy take over, and who immediately like puts back in place this caste system that's really strict. And it says that people can't have different jobs. You can only do the thing that you were born into. And that's why all these bad things happen, and you have to heal mm-hmm. everything from the occupation. And it's just like really gross. Like immediately he looks at a war hero and is like, oh, you're supposed to be an artist. Why are you here?
Mm-hmm.
And yes. just shakes everyone up, and it ends up just really terribly, like all these really old school hardcore people decide that they need to follow him and do what he's saying and take power away from these, you know, lower class people who have gotten into stations above themselves after this caste system got taken out. And then this like old priest guy ends up just straight up murdering someone because they refused to leave the priesthood to go back mm-hmm. to what they were supposed to do, which was like an unclean caste and they shouldn't be there mm-hmm. and just straight up murders this person. Like, what? What? Anyway,
it's not funny, but well, yeah,
just it's just like the way that they put it. The old man is just totally not apologetic at all. He's just like, yeah, I killed him. He wasn't supposed to be here. Just like, what?
He's like spiritually unclean, right? Or some yeah. weird argument.
And so I just...
And isn't... Go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead. I've been talking straight for a long time.
I know, I love it, because I feel like I talk in a lot of the other episodes. This is nice, so go ahead.
Well, I forget. I like the exploration of the character, like taking a step down from something he didn't want to do. And just people in general, mm-hmm. you know, having things that they're supposed to do, or that they've found that is a role that maybe they didn't want to step into, but they're in. And mm-hmm. like the whole kind of what if I didn't do this? What if I gave it up to someone else? And man, does that car just veer right off the road and turn into something terrible. And, you know, at the end, they end up going, he's just like, I don't like what you're doing. And I think you're wrong. I think you're not the emissary. I think I'm the emissary. I take it back. And the person who came through asks him, so what, how are we going to figure out who's the emissary? And Sisko just straight says, let's go talk to God.
It's me.
We're going to go to the wormhole and just talk to God. And then God
he doesn't come back, right? He doesn't come back. No, he doesn't come back. He just comes back, yeah.
So, you know, everyone else is probably like, I don't know, don't mess with Sisko because he's going to take you into the wormhole and you're not going to come back. No, they go and God's basically like, I don't know who you are. You don't matter to me. Let's just kill him if that saving him caused all these problems. And Sisko's just, No, I don't actually want you to kill him. Just, can you put him back where you got him from?
I think what's fascinating about Sisko's character, what did I just say? Sisko's character, to the start to end of the entire series, he battled this idea of being their emissary.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really fun to watch him go kind of back and forth and try, like, when he would allow himself to, like, not necessarily, I don't know if he ever truly believed in it until the very end.
Yeah.
Like, I think even in the episode that you're talking about, it wasn't even necessary that he truly believed he was the emissary. I think it was more so that he believed that the other guy would bring unduly harm to Bajorans.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, and him as a captain and him as his character, as his being, was all for the greater good. So it was always, it always seems like he would agree to something if it meant that at the end of the day, these people, like his people, the people he's watching over, are taken care of. And I don't think it was really until the last season where he was like, okay. And when I say last season, like last episode.
Oh, yeah.
It took him forever. But it also kind of showed you what kind of leader he was, that he would allow this title to follow him if it meant that the people are safe. And he wasn't Bajoran. Like, he was so confused the whole time. He's like, I'm not from here. Like, these aren't mine. This, I don't have roots. I don't have da-da-da. Like,
listen, I'm a black man from Earth.
Right? Like, my family is from the South. We from Louisiana. My father owns a gumbo restaurant. Like, you got me messed up.
I do, like, spoiler alert, I do really like how they wrap that up about why he was connected to it.
How are you going to say spoiler alert and then you didn't actually spoil? I mean, I don't know.
Because I feel like we're going to anything. Say it. That, like, his mom was basic, was one of the gods, was one of the prophets from the wormhole.
So when you say one of us is going to say it,
it was
it
me.
It was you.
That's why I said spoiler alert, Kirsten.
I wasn't
going
to say it. I wasn't going to say
it. I can cut it out.
But now that you said it, I hate the ending. I'm still mad about it. I don't like what they did to Jadzia Dax at the end of the, right before the last season. Like, and we won't even talk about the new Dax. Like, we are okay. I mean, I get it. I get all the things. But you can write a character off better than that.
Yeah. Well, she was pretty tied in. She was married to... Like, you can't...
Right? Like, she just got married to Worf. Like, what? Worf deserved his happiness. He didn't get Counselor Troy, and then he finally got his girl, and then they're, like, just kidding. And, like, her death was almost as bad, if not worse, actually. I feel like in parts it's worse than Natasha Yar's character at the first season of TNG, where I'm like, what the what? That's an essential character.
Well, you know, they sent Keiko off. Keiko left for, like, they were like, yeah, she's gone for a year. She's, like, doing something. And that wasn't, I guess she wasn't as main, like, a main character the way that Dax was. But still, they couldn't come up with an excuse. She's on a training mission to Earth or blah, blah, whatever. Find something.
I mean, they could have come up with so many stories because how many past memories does she have? Like,
But would we have hated Gol Dukat?
I mean... Didn't we already hate him?
I don't think to that level.
I guess, like, that season right before he kills her, there was, like, redeeming qualities where it seemed like they were trying to switch the story.
Mm-hmm.
But you always knew at the end of the day he was no good.
Yeah.
Like, all the Cardassians need to go.
Just gross. Well, he's always hitting on
there's
Kira.
There's some villains.
And he was, like, with her mom.
Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah. No, he was... Yeah.
Gross.
It's not funny. It's not funny. I loved your list. That was a good list.
Yeah, they're really random, but not apparently in seasons, but random in the topic.
I know. You really like, the middle, like, the meat before, like... You get out of the loosey-goosey of trying to introduce all the characters, and then right before it gets real meaty, like, you're, like, right in the...
I liked when they were establishing everything and, like, really laying that foundation. And then, like, they had it firmly established, and they were, like, you knew who these characters were. You kind of knew what it was about before they threw the whole, like, war thing into it. But there are other episodes I like. Like, I like when they have the minefield set up and they totally wreck the station before it gets occupied again. I like when Worf's son is on the same ship as him. Like, that whole episode
is
great.
That was a good story. There's more than one, though, isn't there? Like, doesn't he come on? No, wait. Am I getting things backwards?
I think he's in more than one, but the one where they come back into contact with each other is just one.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. What was his name? Alex?
Yep. Alexander.
Alexander. So when we agreed to talk about this, and I caved and said DS9, and I was like, all right, what, just off top, what can I remember the most about that series? And I think you hit on a couple of things. Like, I love the father-son relationship that you never see in any other season or any other series. You don't really see a captain with a family. Like, yeah, he lost his wife, and that's a whole another part of the storyline, and then reintroducing love and all of that stuff. So, like, it's a whole other storyline, but that father-son thing. And what I love about it specifically too is that it's a black father with a black son, mm-hmm. and that's also something that in a lot of pop culture TV shows, like, black fathers aren't usually involved. And so that their whole story was great. His son got on my nerves what's his friend's name?
Nog.
What's the other guy? That guy up to no good all the time. He's a Ferengi, you gotta kind of buy that no matter what, but I'm like, man,
even when he did the right thing,
I need you to figure things out. Even when he did the right thing.
Even when he went and joined Starfleet, it was just like, oh, you're still just annoying. I don't like you.
Yeah. Like, yeah. We need better friends. I really liked that storyline. I actually really liked Quark's evolution throughout the series. Because you're not supposed to like the Ferengi. You're not, like, the way that they are set up in TNG is that they're just nasty little creatures that care about gold. Or not gold. What am I thinking of? What word am I thinking of? Latinum. That's all they care about. Women. Their women are naked and there's something about their ears. Like, that's all you know. They're real gross characters, and so they're not supposed to have redeeming qualities. But I think that, like, watching Quark move away from some of his cultural norms as a Ferengi and really embrace his crew, right? All these people, and, like, he goes from being, like, really mischievous, like, he's kind of like Garak, as in you don't really know whose side he's on.
Mm-hmm.
Because he, as long as he's making Latinum, he doesn't care who it's from. But then you see when he really steps up and supports the overall mission or the heroes of the story. And so I really like his evolution as a character. And then as nerdy as this sounds, and I probably only really loved it because I love James Darren. but when they introduce Vic Fontaine... And that was like season seven, season eight, where they're like, I think he's supposed to be the lighter part of the stories because now we're already in this full, we have the Maquis,
yeah,
which are Federation, who are breaking Federation laws to be at war with the Cardassians, which, don't get me wrong, they have all great reasons, but they're going into a war that goes against everything that the Federation stands for. And then on the flip side, you have the war that the Cardassians just have mm-hmm. against the Bajorans and how that's all planning out. And then you have the Dominion, mm-hmm. excuse me. So you got all these like crazy like war things going on. So he's like the lighter part of the storyline towards the end. And when I just, he's a hologram.
Mm-hmm.
And so how they've incorporated the holograms into the story, I think in every series they get a little bit more creative on how they can access these holograms and make them meaningful. But I just loved his role. It was so random.
Yeah, like, it was so, like, it seemed really cheesy at first. My husband was not into it, but then it just kind of grows on you.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because it is James Darren. And shout out to Gidget, because that's when I fell in love with him. And even though I wasn't alive when that movie came out, Moondoggy is always going to be my number one. One of my number ones. Has nothing to do with Star Trek, but, like, he brought so much to that role. And I think that he was just fun to watch. Again, I'm really into the really... Oftentimes, his storylines involve the entire main cast.
Yes.
They had to problem solve something, or the hologram won't shut down for some reason, or whatever the storyline is. But they all have to come together and figure it out. And so I really like the ensemble cast episodes. And I think that's true across all the series that I've watched. I'll be honest, I haven't seen all of them. I pulled a no-no and I never finished Voyager.
You didn't? Oh, I finished Voyager.
I never did. It's not, I think it was timing, and I need to go, because I love Janeway.
Chakotay.
I really want her and Chakotay to get together. Oh. I'm not going to lie. I don't know why. Because I'm like, she's married and she's trying to get back to her hubby. Like, let her do that. But, like, they have these moments in the earlier seasons, like when they're stranded, they're supposed to die on the planet. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that in like the second season? Their chemistry is really good. Like they did a really good job, those two. So I didn't finish that. I never watched Enterprise.
I didn't either. That's when I went to school and then I couldn't, you know, I didn't have access to a lot of that stuff. And, you know, I was a dumb college kid.
I mean, no judgment. It had like, that's one of the reasons why I stopped watching the series, the different series, because school picked up, work picked up, practicum picked up. So it just, I didn't get back to it. And when I really wanted to watch Star Trek, I wanted to watch things that, the things that I knew I really liked, because usually it was kind of a de-stressor thing. So I'd go back to the things I love. And I remember I went on a binge. It was after my sister moved. So I was living in Hawaii alone and I was feeling some type of way. And I'm like, I'm going to go on a binge. And so I watched all of the original series. And then I watched all of TNG and intertwined the movies as appropriate of the two casts.
Oh, and, dang.
The end. It was, first off, binging TV shows is really hard for me. I don't know if anybody else has this problem, but I get like emotionally connected to characters. And so in Nemesis, the final movie, and in, I forgot the name of the movie, but it's the one where Kirk finally dies. Like their deaths bothered me. Data's death was like, it broke my heart. I was like, aww. Oh my God. Cause Data obviously is one of my favorite, like he's probably one of my fave characters. I love his bromance with, Geordi LaForge. Mm-hmm. I think what's fascinating about the characters like Spock, Data, I'm trying to think of Quark, the ones who are probably the ones that aren't supposed to be, I mean, they're not human, right? But they probably have the most humanity within them in some ways. I really like those characters. So when Data died in Nemesis, I was like, this is bullshit. like legit, I cried.
Aww.
And when I watched Picard, I'm not going to do any, because Picard is still relatively new. Mm-hmm. The second season's coming out, I think, next year, or they're at least filming next year. But I actually really liked the first season of Picard, but that ending... I was like, oh, the wounds that you reopened and you poured salt and lemon and all the things. And so I was like, oh, ugh. So I'd been watched all of them and I still like, it was just really those groups. And then I jumped back into DS9 for funsies. But there's something about those particular series that I like the most out of the other ones. And I don't really know.
I think
timing, I guess, yeah, of when I watched them.
I think it has something to do because we watched, you know, TNG and Deep Space Nine. That's still, I think, when most of my family all still lived at home. It was before my siblings graduated high school and left for college. So I think that was like a particularly fun time for me to look back on, or I just, that was, you know, that was my real childhood, was that solid block, you know, when I can actually remember. And before two of my siblings graduated in quick succession and left to a different state and never came back to live here again. So I think that it probably is associated with that. And also, you know, that whole thing about anxiety. I'm a very anxious person. And so I do like going back and rewatching things that, you know, I kind of know where it's going. And I love the fact that all of these things are on streaming services now. And, you know, I can skip the crap I don't want to see. I don't have to wait for a rerun to come on and just hope it's one that I like.
Yeah. I'm also not a cliffhanger person anymore. So if I can't watch the beginning of the next season after the end of one season, I get real. I don't want to wait a week. And I... or whatever it is. So I'm thankful for the older seasons, and it's having to wait 2 years for the second season of Picard is like killer for me. But I really do want to get into Discovery. Discovery, I think it leans more towards, when I think of like storylines, but kind of theme, it's probably leans more towards DS9, more of that war-torn, time in space. I don't even know. I think it doesn't even take place between the original Star Trek and TNG. There's weird placements for all of them. Like Enterprise is technically the prequel. Mm-hmm. I think Discovery is before TNG in the storyline.
Is it?
Yeah, because I think they're still at war with the Klingons.
Oh.
Which the original series, they introduce, I guess, the Klingons, but they're not a quintessential character.
At some other point, we'll have to address all the like stereotypes attached to each of these alien races.
Yo. I remember there was one. I'm not gonna get too far into it, but I remember there was an I read an article or something about that where people were complaining that like specifically I think they were talking about TNG was that there's something wrong with the black characters, like they're you can't see their face, they're the only characters where you can't see their face, and so people were calling that out and being like, what the heck. And then I don't think the answer is necessarily a great answer, but they were really talking about like, but they also have some of the most efficient and effective skills out of the crew.
Yeah.
That they can't have a crew without those characters. And I was like, I can't remember the exact language, but it was such a good response. I don't know if it's truly a great response in that. Like, is it necessary that they are somehow, they can't look human? I don't know. I mean, Klingons aren't human anyway, so I don't even know what they're supposed to look like. But like,
well, you know, you have the brown. Like, okay, I'm not even gonna get into it because it's a whole thing. And of course, with everything, there's a good side and a bad side. There's like nothing just a good side. But as you have to address it, right? Because it can't just exist in a vacuum and you be like, oh, we're just gonna pretend that there's nothing wrong with any of this stuff. No, you have to like acknowledge it. In a different episode.
And all of the outfits sucks. All of their outfits sucks. But yes, we can talk about everything that's wrong with Star Trek, but this is our love.
Specifically for DS9.
Listen, when you guys are ready to talk about The Next Generation, I'm all ears.
Hey, it's the holiday season, and my husband got me a Benjamin Sisko ornament that hangs on the tree every year.
Yes. I remember when he got you that. You sent me a picture.
I did.
Like, same day. You're like, look at this. And I was a little bit jealous. Avery Brooks is dope. There's a, there is actually a really good, if there's any extra nerds out there, there's a documentary called The Five Captains. And they interview Scott Bakula, what's her name? Isn't it Catherine Janeway?
Dang it. You know I'm the worst with
names.
I'll
just say their character's name. Whatever Bakula's character is, because I only know him as a human. And then Janeway, Picard, Kirk. Kirk 1, and then Kirk 2 for the movies. And then Sisko. And I think it's William Shatner is actually kind of the one driving the conversation. But it's actually really great. Just getting to meet the characters and the humans that play the characters and how they feel about being connected to their roles and really how their roles have followed them. And I really actually, I enjoyed watching that. Yes, I do watch documentaries about Star Trek. Don't judge.
Okay, where was this? Where was this streaming? Because I have not seen it and I love documentaries. So I like...
It's on... it was on Netflix.
My tagline to my life is I saw it in a documentary, or I just watched this documentary.
I think it should be on Netflix. And then there's also a really good I don't know if they did it for every series, but I know for at the end of The Next Generation they did I think it's a 45 minute mini doc of kind of wrapping up The Next Generation and the experience, like the first seasons where Roddenberry was still alive and had a lot of hand in the pots, and the challenges and the successes of that, and then how it transitioned. So you can really, like, if you guys go back and watch, you see a stark contrast between the first like two or three seasons and then the final seasons. On how they embrace conflict and how the storylines shift and how you see a different dynamic between characters. And so, yeah, they do about a 45-minute documentary on that process and how Patrick Stewart was convinced that he'd be fired every single day. So
oh, no.
He never unpacked. He didn't unpack for, I think, 2 seasons.
Oh, my God.
And then I think he finally was like, oh, I guess they're gonna keep me. But yeah, so if you guys are into those type, they should be. I think they were all on Netflix, but I think Hulu kind of took over all things Star Trek. So it could have transitioned.
DS9 is still on Netflix.
Okay.
So, okay. Watch these documentaries. Go check out the three episodes I mentioned if you want to look them up. Look up Hokulea. Learn more about that indigenous, I guess, the just amazing technology that indigenous peoples have and how they've been discounted and how they're overcoming that right now in present day. I'm going to go watch that documentary and then prepare for more Star Trek talk because I absolutely love that we both love Star Trek. And
it's crack. It gets you through a lot of things.
I love talking about it with you and being able to nerd out with someone who's not my husband.
I feel like before we wrap up, though, we have to rank our captains, including our movie captains.
Oh, no.
Including Pike. You guys, if you haven't seen the pilot of the original Star Trek, Pike is gorgeous. Not saying that William Shatner was not gorgeous at the time, but
Pike, I'm not prepared. Man.
Anyways.
I'm not prepared.
How are you not? You don't have. Okay. How are you not? Well, isn't Sisko like your number one?
You're throwing in way too many people. I just have my number one. I have number one, number two.
Give me. All right, give me your 1-2.
1-2-3. Well, no, 1-2. I have 1-2. It's Sisko is number one for me. He just is. And then 2 is Picard. And that's just, those are the only two I'm like, I have really strong feelings on.
I'd probably just switch mine, but they're probably a close, for very different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say Picard 1 and Sisko 2. But I love them so damn much. And if I could hang out with them in one room and just talk story, it'd be the best day ever.
Not gonna lie, I drank Earl Grey tea because Picard did.
I'll even say Earl Grey hot, expecting my microwave to understand what I'm telling it. Yeah.
You know that day's got to be close. We're all gonna have microphone waves that we can drink. They probably already exist. Come on.
I'm waiting, man. I'm actually waiting for TNG World, and that's a different
that's
podcast,
a whole nother topic, right?
I love the idea of doing things that you love and not having to worry about monetary gain
it.
Like greed does not exist in that world.
I meant just like the pads.
They do things because they love it. Like think Sisko's dad. Oh my god, yeah, that
the
episode.
Restaurant. Perfection.
First off, I felt like I could smell the gumbo through my screen because you know he could throw down. But like just that idea, it seems so impossible, it feels like right now. But I also feel like it could be possible. And that makes me hopeful because people really do. A lot of people love Star Trek and we've seen advancements in technology created because of people who were obsessed with Star Trek. The iPads, our cell phones.
Yeah, communicators, like
all of it.
All of it. Computer.
Even the
screens.
Way we do like vital checking it's not as great as what they have going on in Star Trek series, but it is definitely advanced because of it.
I want one of those shots.
Right? The one that's like it just yes. Yes. And they don't feel anything ever.
Yep. And it's like through the clothes.
Every time.
I want that technology. Thank you so much for listening. This podcast was recorded on Muckleshoot, Duwamish, Stillaguamish, and Coast Salish land. Visit our website at nkletstalk.com to find the list of episodes we talked about today, as well as our documentary recommendations and our captain rankings. Find us on social media at nkletstalk. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and recommend us to anyone you think might enjoy our show. And don't forget, a jiffy is 1/100th of a second. Is that close to warp speed? I don't actually know.